dogs, swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needing some proper manning. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm, if your work be not too shoddy. Careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig as we see you to Davy Jones. But Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Avast, me hearties. To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network, WPRPN. Live streaming today from just off the shores of South Korea's Olympic Fever Coast, you're listening to episode 93 of Pirate Radio Podcasts. I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Podcaster, blogger, footballer, and active member of the Everyday Psych Victims Project, Daryl Brown joins us this week to share with listeners his nightmarish history of having fallen prey to the UK's state-run mental health system. Born healthy and fit in London, England, Daryl's horror story origins can be traced back to around the age of 9, when he was first forcibly drugged in an attempt to treat OCD and Tourette syndrome symptoms. His story serves as a classic example, lesson, and warning to all how the technocratic, profit-driven machine often systematically destroys the lives of all those people it so endlessly feeds upon. And that's a little bit what we're hoping to get into this week in conversing with Daryl, is the exploitative nature and end of things as far as the pharmacratic inquisition and industry are concerned. In the meantime, yes, once again, a little bit of Olympic fever taking off here on the Korean Peninsula. Daryl and I were just conversing prior to going live how, in fact, we had noted on Twitter John Lennon was trending. As things turn out, his classic tune Imagine has been chosen and is being sung by who exactly up in Pyeongchang? I have no idea, because we're not watching the TV here. We can maybe get around to checking that out a little later. Daryl, it's too bad this wasn't the Summer Olympics, or we'd be able to enjoy a few decent footy matches. You're a bit of a fan, from what I understand.
Oh, yeah, definitely. With the World Cup's coming up this summer, though, so that would be that's something definitely to look forward to. But the winter season of football is well on the underway, halfway through, three-thirds through even at the moment. So that's fun. There's always football.
There actually are a few Korean players that have managed to find positions on various, you know, high-ranking.
Oh, yeah, there's some good teams. Ones. I like the way they play. Their technical skills are usually very good. We've had a player at Tottenham that's a team in London, and he's Song, I think, plays as for Tottenham. I don't know if you've heard of that player. I think he's South Korean. Hongmin Song, possibly, is his name. His surname's Son, I think. He's very good player. He just needed to adapt his physical, which he's done very well. It's very difficult to adapt to the Premier League, especially if other leagues are not as physical. He's definitely worked really hard on. He's very quick as well, so he's showing himself what a really good player he is. I've seen in the Olympics, I'm pretty sure I've seen South Korea in the Olympics football before. England or the other teams in the British Isles don't really have a football team in the Olympics. Usually there was only one when we hosted the Olympics. But that was the only time we've entered a team for a very long time, I think. And it was a bit of a shambles. It was a bit of a PR stunt more than anything.
I'm sorry, did you just say that Britain has not... There's been no English football team that's participated in the Olympics for quite some time?
Yeah, probably like half a century or something. It's not something that's really done here. There's very passionate rivalries between the Welsh and the Scots and the Northern Irish, which are the countries within Great Britain. And they have a very passionate nations and have stronger Celtic connections. And the rivalry is very strong. So they don't usually tend to play on the same team, especially when it comes to football.
Oh, you're talking about a British soccer team.
Yeah, in English. The Olympics.
Yeah, British. So that would be something, wouldn't it? It's really too bad they weren't able to get their act together, because you would imagine that would be quite a powerful force to contend with, of course. So any plans on watching the Olympics or following things in any way, the various events, ski jumping, curling, I'm not sure what else, the hockey, of course, figure skating?
I'll probably end up seeing some of it. There'll be clips of it on the TV and it'll be talked about and pushed on the TV. But generally, when it comes, I admire athleticism, but when it comes to sports that have their own following and maintain themselves, I feel like the Olympics is a manufactured push of sports that don't really maintain themselves financially. People don't really seem to, as far as I'm aware, don't really seem to bother following these sports the rest of the time throughout the year. I feel like it's kind of pushed for some as industries more at the Olympics. I don't really feel like it's an organic growth and interest in the sports myself, but I know loads of people love it and I totally respect that.
Yeah, Hitler actually had a really famous quote that he shared with the world regarding sports, and not sure if it was the Olympics per se, just trying to find it here via DuckDuckGo. Something about war without the bloodshed, basically. Anyways, my main interest right now this year is simply because it's based out of Korea and there's a lot of buzz. I'm not sure if the two, you know, South and North Korea actually appeared together during the opening ceremonies. There was talk of them actually walking in together. I don't know if that took place or not. There's also reports of Russia being banned outright from even being able to participate at this year's Olympics period. So I don't know if this is, you know, if that was fake news or hysteria or what the case was exactly. But yeah, I hope to check out a few of the events and follow things, you know, as they unfold here. And there might be some dramatic developments and incidents, as there typically tend to be every time the Olympics do roll around. But we're mostly here, of course, though, to talk about something a little different than the Olympics. And our time is limited, so it's probably a good idea for us to maybe shift gears and focus onto these things. You've got a bit of a story to share with us and our listeners, of course, today. And it goes back to about the age of 9, from what I understand, where you were having some behavioral issues, including obsessive compulsive disorder, or what was seen as obsessive compulsive disorder. I'm not sure if there's a little hyperactivity involved there or not. And Tourette's syndrome symptoms as well. Two, steps were taken to resolve things strictly from a medical standpoint. These were trial test drugs that were used on you, and the results were not all that positive, from what I understand. Maybe if you could just kind of flesh things out for our listeners a little bit, give them more of a clearer picture of what actually occurred.
Of course, I was 9 years old at the time when I was outside the box of as a person going through stress, and that showed up a lot. The first thing that was done was I was removed from my community and sent straight to see doctors and child psychiatrists. They got my diagnoses and drugs. I've since, though, I believe that the way, if you look at I've seen vaccine injuries, I believe I was, the way my character is formed somewhat out of, everybody's different, but formed somewhat out of vaccine injury, which explains partly why the way I am slightly different with things like tics and Tourette syndrome, that they call it. In reality, there was just someone, I don't know, probably in the 1800s, calls a French guy called Gilles Le Tourette's, who made up the name. But there was also things like, I've heard people say there were things like lead poisoning and stuff at the time then too. So I don't think categorizing things as diseases, it's not scientific at all. It's all eugenics based. Nonetheless, I was different and treated medically, eugenically, and taken, and I was going through stress, so I couldn't really hide the stress I was going through, and I was taken away and given all these diagnoses and drugs by the national health system. And these drugs are very poisonous, dangerous, and we were coerced into taking them and given the correct information of the permanent injuries that I now have to live with. I or my mom would not have agreed to the coercion to take them or get treatment from these people, which was the national health system, which is the standard thing that people get thrown into. But I was dragged away to a child mental place, and I was removed from my community, from my school. Everyone was on drugs. All the children were on drugs in that place.
Yeah, as a child of 9, there's very little opportunity or ability to resist or stand up for yourself. So I guess in a lot of ways, you didn't have much choice in the matter, and that you were simply just going along with what you were told was best for you. I'm not sure, was your father involved as well, or were you raised in a single parent household?
In the UK, we live in a nanny state, and women have, and mothers have all the power and legal power. So my dad did disagree with it, but he had no say in the matter, as he was not my female guardian.
Your parents were separated at the time, were they?
Yeah, they were separated at the time, although they both wanted to support me. But I don't believe you can't make correct decisions if they weren't given informed consent. Just like Jews in the Holocaust being told by medical doctors that they're not walking into a gas chamber, they're merely walking into a shower. So of course they're going to go along and agree with it if they're given false information. I don't think you can always make a correct decision if you're lied to and not given informed consent. So my parents had my best interests at heart.
Oh yeah, I'm sure, as most parents do, of course. What sort of drugs are we talking exactly? What kind of names did they go by?
The first one is called Ciroxat, and it was a bright orange, luminous, glow-in-the-dark liquid that was very sugary. So if I could, it would have killed me, but if I could have drank as many bottles of it as I could, it was really tasty. I absolutely would have drunk as many bottles of it as I could because it was really sugary and tasty and glow-in-the-dark. I had no idea it was a drug or what type of drug or anything, really. Had no awareness about that.
You said Ciroxat, is that correct? What's the spelling?
Yeah. It's Ciroxat. And they gave me that under the guise that that's for OCD. And I went to the specialist so-called OCD and Tourette Syndrome Center in the world, in the Maudsley in South London. And they made videos along with the drug company, as far as I can remember. And I was made to watch this video that was a cartoon that falsely explained serotonin receptors were wrong in my brain and that I needed to take the GlaxoSmithKline drug Ciroxat to correct that. But there was no scientific evidence to do that. But nonetheless, my national health system and the drug companies collaborated to indoctrinate me with that Soviet-style brainwashing when I was a little child. And the other drug they gave me was, they call it an antipsychotic, which they give for what they diagnose as Tourette syndrome for no logical reason. And they're very dangerous drugs, and they weren't even tested on children. And I was a guinea pig and tested on, as in the drugs even say that they're only tested, the trials that they got approval for, that they published for approval, that the drug regulators approve, are only about 2 or 3 weeks long trials where they get the approval from. So they have no idea of the long-term effect in adults. I mean, the people they submit the data to could have no idea of the long-term effects. I'm sure the drug companies behind the scene, they rerun as many trials as they want, and they know what kind of chemical formulas, sometimes what they're going for. I believe it's connected to eugenics and biology testing at eugenic centers that are documented and known about and being used in the past for eugenics. I don't think it just went away.
Oh, no, you're exactly right. The history of eugenics is really quite something, and it goes all the way back, in fact, to 1920s USA, even further, if you want to take it even further back to the time of, I guess, Plato and the Greeks of that era were very much big into the idea of eugenics. One of the problems, of course, is when you embark on a campaign, which, as in your case, at least, seems to have run amok and really been misguided, you know, and then the question is like, well, where's the accountability? I think that's one of the issues that you're constantly talking about, is having GlaxoSmithKline, either the investors or whoever it is that is presently a part of that corporation, and it is a pretty big outfit as well too, but having them held accountable. In the search here, what we did was quickly pull up some information regarding the company. GlaxoSmithKline is a British pharmaceutical company headquartered in Brentford, London, established in 2000 by a merger of Glaxo, Wellcome and SmithKline Beecham. GSK was the world's sixth largest pharmaceutical company as of 2015, after Pfizer, Novartis, Merck, Hoffman LaRoche, and Sanofi. Emma Walmsley became CEO on 31st of March 2017 and is the first female CEO of the company. Well, good for her. Maybe you can give her a call and see what she has to say with respect to your situation. You have not been on these drugs for the past 9 years, from what I understand. Have your symptoms or condition improved since then?
Regarding the injuries, I'm still the same person, except I have more energy off the drugs when I cold turkeyed off them, because they turned out to be addictive drugs, so, which is another thing they didn't give informed consent about. So I got through the cold turkey hell. It hasn't changed me as a person, other than, I don't know, possibly nervous system damage. It hasn't changed the things they gave me the drugs for ever. It was all just a ploy to sell drugs. And I've got permanent injuries that I have to live with 7 years after. That I've got permanent injuries that I'll have to die with. Hopefully not, but my genitals went numb, and my genitals are still numb, and they do not respond to arousal and sexual dysfunction. And I can never quite get used to having the sensation in my genitals go numb and be controlled from the drugs they indoctrinated and gave me when I was a child. And I've been off them 7 years now. I've also got other damages, like intestinal damages, things that I didn't have before. And on withdrawal, exacerbated things. At some point when a dosage increase happened as well, that kind of exacerbated things, like I started getting intestinal damage, and the withdrawal made the intestinal damage worse. But beyond everything else, the possession of my sexual genitals that are mine, that's beyond the most horrifying, nightmarish, humiliating thing that I have to carry with me every day, 7 years later. And it has really changed me as a person.
I would imagine so. Also would presumably have something of an impact on your romantic life and any potential relationships that you would be hoping to pursue. That's got to be a bit of a setback, of course. I'm not sure if you want to address that or not, as to whether you've had any success in finding somebody that's willing to I don't know what the best way of putting this is. Finding somebody who's willing to work with the situation, I suppose, you know, as far as being in a relationship with someone who is challenged in that department with the erectile dysfunction or what have you. I'm not sure. Is that something that you want to get into or address or not?
Yeah, it's important. It's severely affected and humiliated my connections with women and forming relationships and romance and interactions. It's pretty much a no-go zone mostly. And so it's really affected that. And it usually ends in humiliation. But more importantly, it's about my dignity. And even if someone did like me, I wouldn't want to be trapped by the idea. I wouldn't want to be trapped into, somebody will accept me like this. Anybody who will accept me like this, I have to settle for. But yeah, the dignity, the nightmare never really goes away. I can't wake up and it's gone away. My genitals being numb is just really scary. I want it to be over. I want it to wake up and it to go back to normal and my genitals not be numb. The keys to my own body, essentially, is what's really disturbing. I'm not sure I can actually even be around someone, really. Even so, it's very tough being around people in that state. It's definitely not something I was expecting. But I have found out on the internet, because the people that give you the drugs just defame your character and further lock you up and try and tell you it's not real and all that kind of stuff. So I had to find out on the internet that this is happening to thousands of people across the world at least, and they've come up with their own terms for what this is called, because the sexual dysfunction is actually really common while people are on these drugs. But when it stays as a permanent injury, despite people not taking these drugs anymore, some people have come up with the term post-SSRI sexual dysfunction or even post-antipsychotic sexual dysfunction. I think using both terms just gets confusing, so people generally just use the post-SSRI sexual dysfunction term, the PSSD term, instead of getting complicated also using the post-antipsychotic sexual dysfunction term. People tend to stick to one term, partly because a lot of people have been put on multiple drugs, like I was, both SSRI and antipsychotic, and partly because it's easier to understand one reference term than multiple reference terms.
Yeah, it can be a bit of a mouthful, I guess, and leave people a little confused as to what is actually going on, what issues are really at play and at stake. So chemical castration, though, definitely is a really concise way of putting things, and I think an accurate way of describing the situation as well, too. This is one of the things that, from what I understand, based on, I believe, what you've shared via your blog, that chemical castration, or at least the drugs that are used and that you were exposed to and that you consumed over the course of, well, from 9 to the time, I guess you were about 21? Is
that most of my life by that point?
So what is that, about 14 years? Something along those lines of being on these drugs. And you can sugarcoat it. And I know that the Brits are good at this, the nanny state, Orwellian Leviathan, or as some would put it, Kraken, with the euphemisms, things like jabs, for example. You know, I love that one with, oh, don't worry, it's just a little jab. It's like, well, wait a minute. Let's, you know, you can couch it in those terms, you know, very euphemistic. Or you can look at it in the sense of, well, hang on a second, you're shooting me up here. It's a state-sponsored toxic injection here, which I'm not really too cool with. So two things, I guess. Did you ever have to submit to injections of any kind? And secondly, is it not the case that the very same drugs that you were on for this extended period of time are, in a lot of cases, the ones that are used that the state actually prescribes in order to, when it comes to pedophiles, basically people that have been convicted and found to be sexual predators, primarily, I guess, people that have been overly interested in a sexual way with children, They've been prescribed by the state to be on the same type of drugs. Is that not the case? Along with the injections, did you ever have to submit to getting basically shot up by the state.
When I was a child, I took the drug and I was brainwashed. I took the medications without question, so I didn't necessarily have to be forced to by injection. And also, I've been smart enough and scared enough since it happened to never allow them to manipulate me into a situation where they could do that, because they will do it to anyone. They can literally say anyone's crazy and do it to them. But I've avoided that, especially after what happened. I was brainwashed to take them, so they never, since I was a young child, so I never had to be forced to take them for injection. And yes, the scheme by the UK government that they give these drugs to paedophiles, both antipsychotics and SSRIs, which they call antidepressants, are given to paedophiles, and they call the scheme chemical castration. They get informed consent when they are given these drugs to chemically castrate them. But people going to their doctors are not given informed consent, and it doesn't even say it on the leaflets.
Well, how about that? More people, obviously, as you say, the informed consent is quite critical. And if you're withholding information or only presenting the public with half of the picture, and even at that in a warped, distorted fashion, that's not too good, of course, and that they need to be held accountable. And on top of that, people need to stop and, of course, ask themselves, why do they have to go so far as to present things in a dishonest manner rather than being straightforward about it all? It would seem that really perhaps they don't want the public to know certain things, especially when it comes to the impact of what these drugs stand to have on our overall health condition. So that's definitely a hot issue. In fact, one that has led to you being banned across several platforms and various forums, from what I understand. Maybe you could share with our listeners a little more regarding that, how that, what has actually taken place, and where have you been banned from, and why you think it's come to this?
I've luckily, in this day and age, I can speak on the internet. Whereas if you complain or talk about it to the mental health industries, eugenics buildings that do this to people, they will simply lock you up and inject you, call you crazy, and or tell you it's a mental disease. And you might even believe that it's a mental disease instead of what's actually happening. And you're subdued on drugs if you accept the drugs and believe that stuff. You don't get very far that way, and people don't know. So luckily, in this day and age, I made the hard choice, because it's extremely humiliating, and I didn't want to have to further humiliate and indignify myself. Most people wouldn't. I'm very rare, because this has been reported by thousands of people across the world, that it's permanent. So it's definitely something that people have a right to know about. But my view is not welcome. There's a lot of charities, they call them mental health charities, to induct people into the mental health industry to take these drugs, to seek help, quotation. And that help ends up selling drugs for pharmaceutical companies through the national health system that we have here. And sometimes forced, sometimes not. Most people are coerced into doing it voluntarily, although they're not given informed consent. So that's not necessarily voluntarily. And these charities get funding from the drug companies. So there's a number of platforms. This affects people in groups, even if they believe in mental eugenics diseases and depression as a disease and stuff, all those kind of groups and stuff. It's like a religion for people as well.
Just a second here. Isn't that something of a conflict of interest with the charities receiving donations and money from drug companies, like almost like a kickback of sorts, or some sort of like a bribe, like a payoff or payout? It seems to be a major, massive, very flagrant conflict of interest. How this is tolerated, I don't know. Can you maybe go into that in a little more detail? That's got me a little, maybe I need to be medicated now, I guess, in the eyes of some. Calm down now, Jaffe. Take these pills, make you feel a little better.
Yeah. Well, even the drug companies, drug regulators are funded by the drug companies. So this is, yeah, there most definitely is a conflict of interest. as they're registered charities and working on with the government, on behalf of the government, and cooperation with the government, and also taking people's tax money and generous donations as well, they should not ban people off of their platforms on whether it be Facebook or internet forums. There's the independent forums that I've been banned, and Facebook groups that I've all been banned from, pretty much all of them, as well as the mental health charity ones, which are obviously the biggest ones. The mental health charities that are funded by the drug companies have come up with the word stigma. So it's the equivalent of being called a racist or something. That's the way they're trying to advertise it. So any criticism of it is classified as stigma, and they will ban you. And Facebook, which is a platform which many people use, Google and Facebook will start doing, I think they already do it. If they see, you can report people if you think that they're saying something you don't think they should be saying mentally, hygienally. So if people are feeling upset, anybody can report them via Facebook. And on Google, if certain search terms are flagged and reported straight to the government, or you're asked a question about doing a so-called depression test, a mental hygiene test is what I would call it, and that can set you up straight to a referral to the government as well, or you'll end up being in contact with the government. And this is very important to remember, that this is done to children, and so if they ban me telling, for example, children what happened to me, how can people who are unaware, or vulnerable people or children, hear the experience of what happened to someone who did go through that system of so-called help? If they just ban me off there, which they did, and people report, and most forums and everywhere has something called a community standard guidelines, and that can mean anything. Essentially, you're breaking the law in their world if you do something that is against their rules. And things like mental health stigma, which is what they've called it, they've marketed it as, is one of the things, I think, where they ban me for, and it's against their community guidelines. That's tend to how it's happened. So I'd kept finding myself locked out of accounts, banned, warned by moderators. And so I'm not even allowed to warn people on all the platforms that they're advertising for children to get help on, which is really barbaric. On Facebook, there's sponsored posts on people's timelines, and mental health charities are always advertising to children on their timelines as well, putting suggestive implants in their head. Are you struggling to deal with things? Maybe there's something wrong with your brain, go get help. So it's a really sick, sadistic world. And they always ask for lived experiences, and they keep posting people's lived experiences who say, you need to get help, it's all wonderful, I believe in mental disease, that I have a mental disease. So they're always reposting, the people will get seen. Some people just like posting these things because they know they can easily get it seen. If they send in something that sucks up to the idea of mental health and disease, they will post those submissions all day long. But obviously they won't post real lived experiences like mine at all, and they'll ban, and people will self-police and report you as well, and they'll stop you posting articles and start and lock you out of your account. All these things have happened to me, so it's becoming increasingly difficult to even warn people on the internet.
I understand. I hear you. And I myself have actually been the victim, really, of similar actions, just simply for speaking out on such hot topic issues as Israel, climate change, man-made CO2 based climate change. That will get people a lot of times quickly shut down or kicked off of forums because of politically incorrect views. It's amazing how this takes place, and not because we're engaging in any profanity or launching personal attacks or anything of the sort, simply coming with the truth. And that seems to be a little too much for certain people to handle or to know what to do with exactly, other than just to try to stamp it out and delete people and their accounts from being active and able to contribute to the discourse and dialogue. So what exact, naming names now, you know, I think we'd like to hear, what forums are we talking about exactly, as well as platforms? If Facebook, I guess you say, has been a problem. Can you name any of the groups, as well as just generally the forums online that you've experienced these same issues with?
Yes, definitely. I'd love to. On Facebook, the platform itself, and people self-policing and reporting, and the American charity, which is the huge one, it's very well funded by drug companies, called Mighty on the Mental Health. I was banned very quickly from that one. I can't write or post anything on there. It blocked out the thing where you can write a message or a reply or a post. I was banned very quickly from that one. But that apparently is funded very much by the drug companies, and that's in people's social medias and pops up on people's iPhones. That's like one of the really out there ones, popping up on children's iPhones and stuff. Mighty on the Mental Health. There's an article that someone wrote for Mad in America that used to work for them. She wrote an article explaining why she quit from them, which was, she was saying that the drug companies, that they had to advertise drug companies or push certain things because they'd got funding from drug companies or something of the like. Also, Time to Change banned me. A lot of the times they'll simply hide my messages so people won't see them. On Time to Change, that happened quite a bit, that they would say, you're not allowed to talk about medications. It's against our guidelines, so we have hidden your post. And I noticed, because I was posting some of the interviews that I did of people with lived experience on there sometimes and asking people to take notice of it, and they stopped getting views. Initially, when I posted on NAMI, for example, I posted the website that I'd made exposing, further humiliating myself after they chemically castrated me, further exposing what the drugs had done to me. I set up the blog I made called Sterilizing the Mentally Ill, and I posted it on NAMI, and the videos and the webpage suddenly got like thousands of hits, like around a thousand, I think it was, very quickly. And then after that, all the videos and things that I post, they didn't get any more views after that. So I'm guessing that a lot of the time they hide it and don't even inform you that they've hidden your posts. So Time to Change, Mighty on the Mental Health.
What does NAMI stand for?
A depression
exactly?
Support group on Facebook. NAMI stands for That's the main American so-called mental health charity. National American Mental Illness, something like that. I'm not sure, but that's the main mental health charity in America. Over here, it's called Mind. Mind have been a little bit better than the others because they get less funding from drug companies. Eventually, Facebook banned me and people self-police reported me through Mind anyway, instead of Mind themselves, although they weren't really getting views on Mind. So eventually, I just kept getting locked out of Facebook for breaking Facebook's community standards. But
jeez.
I think it was depressionforums.com or something, which is like the main forum boards for, you know, people talking and looking up depression and stuff and mental illnesses. And there's a whole list of drugs on the forum. There's like a forum section for each drug. And obviously some people don't like what I post, but the boards and moderators themselves on there ended up removing my posts and sending me messages saying it's against their guidelines, you're not allowed to talk about medications or whatever, or and if I do it again they'll outright complete ban me. So basically banned from their depression forums. It might be .org or something. And there's one post I made that was still there that was I found on a Google search, so I decided not to make any more posts on there because then that will probably go too. So I decided I better cut my losses and run with this. Although they say, like, you're not allowed to talk about this and this and or medications, certain things about it. Every forum post has a list for each drug company. They're like advertising the drug companies for each individual drug. They've got their own section on the board for each drug. It's like free marketing for the drug companies. So I don't know whether that's intentional or not, but that seems a bit off. And Psych Central, those forums, they actually have an article about PSSD, although they don't call it that, about permanent chemical castration from the drugs. That's like the biggest website, I think, and forums I think there is on the internet regarding this stuff. I think it's set up by a psychologist. Psychology is the same thing. You'll end up on drugs. So the way I see it is part of the same system, and that route will end up people on drugs. It's not like I don't believe in that. It's the same eugenics to me. But a psychologist set up psychcentral.com I can't remember if it's .com or something, but you'll find it very easily. It's the biggest one. That one, some people obviously get very annoyed that I shared my experience. What the moderators do is they told me I can't, it's breaking their community guidelines, and if I do it again, I'll be effectively banned. But even though there's an article that they wrote themselves from the owner of the site that was saying it should be in the news and that should be a newsworthy story, not that he said the rates of sexual dysfunction in his experience as a psychologist, where people come and see him, the study showed it was about 1 in 2 people. So half of all people get sexual dysfunction off of just the antidepressants, the SSRIs. And in his experience, the people that were brave enough to tell him that their drugs were causing him that, a lot of people wouldn't tell. So he said, yeah, that study sound about right. There's studies of thousands of people that have been done that say it's about half of all people. And he said that rings true in his experience of people coming to see him that have told him it's 1 in 2, that it's half of all people. And he wrote an article on this very same website, the forum that I'm banned from and can't post these things. His article, who's the owner of the site, said, that's not the newsworthy story. I think there was an article that he picked up on, or a couple of articles that picked up on it that were reporting it. And he was saying, they're picking up the wrong bit of the story. The newsworthy bit of the story is that it can be permanent even when you stop taking the drug. That's the thing that should be newsworthy and scaring people. So he was saying exactly what I was saying. And I got banned off the forum boards there for saying what the site owner said. But anyway, I can't post anything there again either.
Not newsworthy. And it also doesn't, according to the powers that be, fall within the parameters of the so-called community guidelines. Very kind of vague and nebulous, airy fairy. Can we really pin down these, you know, the guidelines? So it's great that we do have places like minds.com, which, from what I understand and based on what other crew members here on the Robinhood have told me, they see that you've been somewhat active as of late. So that's really great to see you're allowed that freedom of expression versus the outright attack, the attempt to humiliate, censor, or what have you. So that's, you know, something that you'll have to, I guess, tell more people about, make the most of, and we can do our best here from this end of things as well to work on getting the word out, because these are issues that need to be discussed, need to be talked about, more people need to think about, it needs to be put on the agenda and become more newsworthy rather than simply cast to the side and neglected, or otherwise just presented in a way which is really inaccurate and distorts the reality of things. So speaking of the crew here on the Robinhood and the like, one of the things that we discussed in the lead up to streaming our show here, episode 93 with Daryl Brown out of the UK, 4 a.m., I believe, in London, as things are. One of the things that we talked about, and thank you very much for staying up at this particular time, we have managed to get about 8 people all together, is what it looks like, listening as we present things here on this, what is it, February 9th, I guess, Friday, February 9th. Olympics in Korea once again kicking off simultaneously, so perhaps the stars are all optimally aligned. Who knows? We'll have to see how it all plays out. But we did talk a little bit about a pirate story, and you had mentioned something about the press gang. I guess you've looked into this and researched the press gang phenomenon a little bit. In order to gain full kind of formal passage onto the Robinhood, it is one of the things that the captain does expect and ask of guests. So what exactly did you have in mind regarding the press gang?
Looked into a lot of things as a result of trying to find out what in the world is happening. This is not an accident. What happened is what the paths of investigation led me down. And during this period of discovery and investigation, I recently learned about the press gang. I'm not an expert on it at all, but it's also involving drugs in some way and coercion. It was when people were an island and ships ruled the seas in Britain, they needed a strong navy you can control the world with. the strongest navy became the most important thing to empires at a certain point in history. And the government started to make changes in laws that people should stop growing, should be given incentives, financial and otherwise, to grow their wheat fields, which would usually be used for bread, into making into alcohol. So they opened up a lot of public houses, otherwise pubs, bars, where people drink, and especially around the coast. It wasn't official policy because it was officially probably illegal, but they encouraged it, and it was something that people didn't get in trouble for. So it was pushed by the government, where people would, especially in coastal towns, especially young people, would go drinking in these bars, getting drunk, and then they would be kidnapped and or hit over the head and dragged, initiated into the Navy, because they needed big Navy, and people wouldn't get in trouble because they needed a big Navy. And that's what the press gang was, getting people into the Navy via alcohol, coercion, and good old kidnapping. Does that sound familiar with you?
That sounds about right, yeah. Shanghaied is another way of putting things. That, from what I understand, comes out of the Opium War era, the mid-19th century, mid to late 19th century. There were, I believe, two official opium wars. We ourselves presently living through what some might even call the third, of course, based on what we're seeing with this Western, the military presence in places like Afghanistan, in particular. I'm not sure about Pakistan, but these are both, of course, regions that are quite well known for their production of opium and various other, speaking of drugs, related products. So, which leads us to the whole issue of the war on drugs. This business we hear constantly, repeated incessantly, the war on drugs. Well, what drugs? You know, whose drugs? What are we talking? Why is alcohol okay? Why are cigarettes okay? Speaking of these pubs and whatnot, historically, let's not forget as well hemp shires and hemp steads. Hemp was a big deal back up until, well, until Prohibition came about. So there was a massive conspiracy at the highest levels, as there typically tends to be with these sort of things. And it all ties into the Opium Wars, of course, the British East India Trading Company playing a central role. You, of course, being out of England, would probably have heard of the British East India Trading Company. There was the Dutch East India Trading Company as well, too, from what I understand. But the war on drugs is a real, it's a farce, frankly, and you are a living example of this. Well, what we're finding is that the truth, really, it's a bitter pill to swallow for some. In particular, those who are of a vested and hold a vested interest. It's something they don't want to hear or to talk about, and the best that they can do is, once again, shut people down, try to paint them or portray them in a less than flattering light. Ad hominem attacks, let's not forget, often quite effective. Well, it all depends, really, who your audience is. The ad hominem attacks don't always work with everyone. But this, yeah, really is quite something, the situation that you find yourself in at the present time. Thank God you managed to get yourself off of these drugs, courtesy of GlaxoSmithKline. You know, maybe, have you managed to get in contact with the drug manufacturing companies, the heads of these outfits, and lodge your complaint?
No. The people that I have tried to contact officially usually come back with the response that everything's totally legal.
Everything any dictatorship has ever done through all of history has been legal. It doesn't mean it's good, doesn't mean it's moral, doesn't mean it's ethical or decent or humane, but it's legal. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So I'm sorry for cutting you off there. Was there, maybe you want to finish your point?
No, that's precisely a very good way of putting it. The human rights organizations obviously don't help. They're not interested in that kind of thing either, which it is a human rights issue.
They have no interest in seeing these problems resolved then, I guess, as with the drug companies or these charities who themselves are a vested interest. They prefer to maintain the status quo rather than rock the boat, as it were, you know, steady as she goes, versus this business, of course, of reform, holding people to account, shaking things up a little bit, bringing some attention to certain issues that maybe aren't being talked about enough currently with the way that the agenda is laid out. In particular, once again, big media tending to ignore these things. How often do we hear about these issues being discussed in the large corporate media? What do you expect? So that's, I guess, why we find outlets like Minds.com and the alternative media more of an option, of course, something that people can turn to when they do have an issue where they feel they have been done wrong by, I suppose, and are looking to better set things in order. So once again, just to remind people that we have steady as she goes here, folks. 8 listeners, people joining in with the stream here as we present episode number 93 with Daryl Brown out of the UK. I believe it could even be London, as a matter of fact. About 4 a.m. where you are right now, Daryl, is that right?
Yeah, it's 5 a.m. at the moment, but I'm good. I don't get peace or sleep or rest since this happened. So staying up and doing this I'm very grateful for the few platforms people like you afford to one of the only few avenues left I have.
You've actually got your own blog, pssdblog.blogspot.com, I believe, is where people can find what it is that you have to share with the world. Anyone who's interested in looking into your story a little more and getting clear on the particulars. You've also got a podcast that you produce on a semi-frequent or regular basis.
Yeah, the Everyday Psych Victims Project. I do some interviews. I interview other people and upload them there on the YouTube there and on the Facebook there. And I'm involved in that. I've interviewed people with PTSD amongst the other crimes that the eugenics industry inflicts on people.
Let's get into that a little more here in just a second. But first of all, you know, I have yet to really recap what we've had taking place here in the YouTube chat area. So let's pay a little bit of a visit and attention to what we have going down over here. A lot of lively action. The Everyday Psych Victims Project logged in. Joe 333 as well as Joe Eminon. So we got the two Pirate Joes in the house for this show. That's great. Folks commenting on the slideshow and the photos that we have streaming out to the viewers and audience at this particular moment. Looks like Everyday Psych Victims Project hoping to get in touch with John Ford. Don't know if you know too much about Mr. Ford or not, Daryl. He is a UFO political prisoner. UFO political prisoner, I guess that's one way of putting it for sure. Someone that we've talked about a couple times here on Pirate Radio podcasts. People that who are interested can go back into the archives and check out what it is that we've produced over the past couple of years. The few shows that we did put together dealing with John's story. But yeah, it looks like the Everyday Psych Victims Project is hoping to get in touch with John Ford. He has been committed, institutionalized here since around the mid-1990s. And there's no real good reason that we can see why he is being held against his will at the present time. So hopefully they will manage to get in touch with John and have some sort of feedback from his end of things. Just scrolling down here through the text chat area, Joe 333 talking about sharing show information with his boys. And that they were quite impressed, I guess, knowing that it was that Uncle Jaffe has a show here that he produces on a weekly basis with the rest of the crew aboard the Robin Hood. We've experienced a little bit of a few technical setbacks here as far as being jammed with respect to the keyboard end of things. It's difficult for us to actually type anything or to share text chat. We often have to refresh the browser, so I'm not sure why that's the case. There's other people here that are reporting how everything seems to be fine from their end. So this has been an ongoing and reoccurring issue. More technical issues over on Podomatic as of late, where with our latest episode, William Ramsey, the Smiley Face Killers, we finished the post-production end of things with that particular show, episode 92 of Pirate Radio Podcasts, and are having difficulty in editing things at the moment. So that's been going on for the last day or so, where things have been totally shut down and we're finding ourselves completely incapable of getting anything further done over there. So that's
a I listened to that I think I've heard him on another show as well, and that is, I thoroughly believe that there's a possibly similar group of elite people. We have a group here in the UK, a lot of these people that are in these elite societies that set up social control programs to control and farm animal our lives are set up in are like secret clubs in universities, and one of them is outed, so it's not so secret, called the Bullingdon Boys Club in the UK. And that's where our a bunch of our prime ministers and a lot of people, deputy prime minister, and are pictured in the Bullingdon Boys Club, which is a secret elite club at these universities. The guy that set up mental health to rise out of the ashes of war, called Project Phoenix, John Rawlings Rees, he was in the Invisible Club at Oxford. That's how a lot of these people operate. So I don't know that if those really sick people, and they have a lot of influence, so they could well be jacking with you and they don't like what they're doing being spoken about. But as possibly, if it's anything similar, they could be organizing themselves at secret clubs at universities. The mental health one was called the Invisible Club at Oxford. And the one where a lot of our prime ministers in the UK get done at, where they go around smashing things and breaking the law because they can get away with it, at Eton University in England. And they're called the Bullingdon Boys Club, all our future leaders, world leaders and stuff. So hopefully we rub people up, and I wouldn't be surprised if they don't want people to know about it.
That's partly our job and our mandate, I suppose, being members of the Fifth Estate, as independent, underground, and grassroots as we are.
They'd want to shut it down before it gets any further, I would have thought.
Well, that's why we find all these ridiculous measures being taken throughout social media, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. There's clearly a hidden agenda, which they couch within the terms and parameters or context of community guidelines. As you pointed out, and as I've re-emphasized, so there's no doubt about that. This is once again vague, highly abstract and nebulous sort of a principle versus something like Minds.com, which embraces the free speech in the genuine classic liberal sense of the word. Liberal is not a dirty word, folks. It's a question of, though, of course, how these terms are used. George Orwell talked about, ultimately, I believe it was in his essay, Politics and the English Language. It was one of his famous essays, if people want to look into this, talking about how terms such as liberal and conservative ultimately had lost all their meaning, even during his particular period in time, back in the 30s and 40s. So, but I guess when I use that, I'm speaking from the standpoint of classic John Stuart Mill, liberal, laissez-faire, hands-off, just let people be way of looking at things and approaching issues such as free speech, freedom of expression, and the right simply to exist. Do no harm. Once you cross that threshold and start messing with people in a direct manner, then that's clearly where your liberty and the right to it has been extinguished and nullified. The Bullingdon Club we have founded here via quick DuckDuckGo search. It's Bullingdon, Bullingdon Boys Club, UK. There's an exclusive all-male dining club. How gay is that? Well, not gay necessarily, it's homo. Homo just simply meaning the same, you know, of the same type. So for Oxford University undergraduates, although it's not officially recognized by that institution, kind of like almost like a Skull and Bones type outfit, really. quasi-Masonic organization, from what I can see here. There's certain stories that have come up under this DuckDuckGo search. The secrets of Oxford University's elite in a class of their own, so on and so forth. So, well, thank you for that tip there, and just having drawn our attention to this organization. Another one was the Invisible Club. Is that what you said?
The Invisible College.
Ah, the Invisible College. Now, time, we've only got about another 20 minutes. We could maybe go for 20, 30 minutes or so. But if you could maybe talk about the Invisible College, I know I've heard of it. And just within the context, I guess that's within the context of eugenics, Bertrand Russell and the like. Am I on the right in the right area here? Or?
I don't know too much about the Invisible College. But I know the guy that the people that are involved in setting up, renaming and reframing and having calling it mental health and having mental health community centers everywhere to get eugenics to everyone and psychologically evaluate and do this to a lot of people. They met and set up their plans through the Invisible College at Oxford. John Rawlings Rees was a big leader of that, and that's how I think he got involved or organized surrounding that. And it's happened. You can see a transcript of his conference for mental hygiene at the Tavistock, which has funding from the Rockefeller Foundation, which also at the UN to spread it throughout the world. He also set up the World Federation for Mental Health, and he set up that as well after setting up the system here through the UN, which will spread this throughout the whole world, Rockefeller Foundation, so no one will be free from psychological evaluation and treatment, quotations. The other members on the board that he set it up with were people like Werner Verlinger, who was a Nazi psychiatrist, psychologist, on the T4 euthanasia experiment, where they were killing lots of people en masse, and he was one of the key members also setting up the World Federation for Mental Health with him. And he actually, after doing that in Nazi Germany in maybe the 50s, so well after World War II, he then went into America working for educating American youth on so-called mental health after being involved in mass genocide. Eventually, at some point, someone in the German government wanted to investigate him, and he jumped off a cliff to avoid investigation.
Yeah, jumped, or perhaps was, why are we assuming jumped necessarily? That's the official.
True, why are we assuming jumped, yes.
The official, as so many of these bankers and so forth, jumping, leaping to their deaths from these high-rise buildings, that's the official story. Let's maybe consider the possibility of there being another narrative or reality at play here, in a sense of maybe being pushed or assisted.
That's very true. But can you believe that? Involved in the mass murder of people in a euthanasia experiment in Nazi Germany. And then he was, two decades later, lecturing Americans on what their child's mental health.
These are historical facts here, from what I understand. This is all within the context as well, too. Let's not forget Operation Paperclip. Look no further. Werner von Braun. Who is this other Werner German Nazi character that you mentioned? What was his name again?
Werner Verlinger.
Verlinger. Well, how about that, folks? So, yeah, once again, Operation Paperclip. Not only did a lot of these Nazi scientists find themselves with jobs, eventually courtesy of NASA, but they are said to have, Daryl, our guest here today, episode 93, Bedlam in the UK, has drawn to listeners' attention, were quite active in the American Psychiatric Association and its evolution over the years, where, as you've, I guess, pointed out, basically, he, after playing an active central role in mass extermination via the Nazi political machine, was invited to the West, then to educate people throughout North America on the issue of a matter of eugenics, mental hygiene and the like. Is that correct?
Yes, with children. So the systems that are set up today in America, in the US of A, on children and what they call mental health in children in America, he was one of the people So the very things that he was setting up are being used today.
Mental hygiene, the whole term itself is such a farce, frankly. You know, as was with these words like dis-ease or disorder. Well, who does not suffer from mental dis-ease or disorder? We've all got issues. And that's where the pharmaceuticals come into the picture saying, hey, we've got the cure. We've got the solution. Look no further than us. Forget about things like meditation, of course, which is free and natural. So God forbid people start to meditate en masse. That would really cut into their bottom line, of course. You know, yes. But I mean, if you follow what I'm saying, who does not, the whole world suffers from mental dis-ease and mental disorder. Of course, that's what it means to be human. We struggle, we suffer. It's up to us, I guess, to work things out. Once again, meditation, I think, being a great solution to many of our psychological issues. Go within yourself. Watch that monkey mind at play, the chatterbox. That's not who we really are. And I know this is a little different from, well, it's related somewhat to your issue as far as obsessive compulsive disorder and this business of Tourette's syndrome. But yeah, really critical stuff there, folks, just to sit and calm yourself down, focus, let the breath exhale from your lungs, let it all go. Wow. There you go, folks. So definitely something worth researching. Operation Paperclip and how it is that the Nazis were brought in en masse, from what I understand, a real covert fashion. You know, these are the people our grandparents had gone to fight against, who were told they were expected to put their lives on the line for the sake of democracy and freedom and all the goodness that the West stood for in its values, wholesomeness and righteousness, morality and the like, against the evil Nazi war machine. The war comes to its conclusion, and what do we find happening but secretly, covertly, courtesy of the CIA, as well as other organizations as well, too, you know, would not in the least be surprised if that were the case, finding their way to the West. You know, what kind of numbers are we talking that exactly? Have you looked into that, Daryl? I heard it was really widespread. I mean, this is a systemic, you talk about textbook classic conspiracy, courtesy of the CIA, in conjunction with the Nazi intelligence networks. They were not punished. They were not sent to the war crimes tribunals in Nuremberg. They were allowed to go free. Even recently, it's once again come to light via the FBI files that came to the surface thanks to the effort of the Trump administration, JFK files and the Trump dump. I know a lot of people like to bash on Trump. Myself, though, I prefer to take a more balanced approach, even with characters like Obama or Trudeau. Although I'm not really finding too many good things to say about Trudeau, unfortunately, at all. So I wish I could, but the weed issue, a little bit, maybe, but not really. No, because he even waffled out of that after having won the election. He basically... What he said was, thanks for electing me to office, but, you know, this business of legalizing marijuana in Canada, I just realized, had it drawn to my attention, that we are bound by an international treaty. So I'm really got my hands tied here, not able to do too much. So when you hear about things like national sovereignty, well, where is it? Doesn't really seem to exist, does it? It's like been nullified and courtesy of these, and as a result, these so-called international treaties, multilateral agreements signed at the highest levels, perhaps via further organizations and networks or clubs, elite groups such as the Bullingdon Club, the Invisible College, Skull and Bones, so on and so forth. So anything more you'd like to add, Daryl? I know I've really kind of unpacked a lot in response to what you had to share, so you might like to jump in there.
There is some statistics that are not very complete, but of what we know that I could possibly add to what we do know, that if we can go on what we've already spoke about, half of all people on just the so-called antidepressant drugs develop sexual dysfunction or chemical castration, then the statistics on the MHRA, which is supposed to be the UK drug regulator, the adverse effects are never reported on. No one's heard of the MHRA. So the numbers are really low. For out of the millions of people in the UK that are on so-called antidepressants, despite it being half of all people on them, it seems from what we know, get sexual dysfunction. The rate of it reported is merely just 1,000-something people reported it. But the permanent sexual dysfunction, despite coming off the drug that stays, the number that were reported of that is more than 20% of that figure. It's still a small number because the numbers of reported are so small themselves, but that's the only number we have to go on right now. It's more than 20% of that has been permanent for people despite coming off those drugs.
And you yourself are not too clear as to where things stand with you on a personal basis regarding your potential sex life, as it were, an ability to reproduce or maintain an erection, you know, get a hard on and, you know, keep got wood, as it were. In the porn industry, they talk about that a lot. The ability to get and to keep or maintain wood for that money shot. So and as far
the
as
the UK government calls it chemical castration, yeah, when they're giving them to paedophiles, then I don't think there's anything unreal about calling it chemical castration.
Oh, no, that's right. Absolutely. Now, with
and the first phase in school, I remember educational-wise, the first phase of sex officially, according to whatever science that is official and taught, you can't reproduce without the three stages of sex or whatever, and one of them is the first initiation phase. The rest doesn't really happen without it.
Have you considered paying a visit to a place like, for example, Amsterdam, or maybe you don't even have to go that far, Bangkok or the like, but no, some sort of sexual therapy, presenting your situation to your therapist, who's a woman. You've already made it clear to, well, me just off the record and just prior to us here going live with today's stream that women are definitely your thing. So yeah, you need someone as a sexual therapist, I suppose, in a hands-on kind of manner, if you catch my drift, really working in the best way to get things stimulated and on the go. Have you looked into that at all?
Not really. It's my dignity that can't be recovered, that I don't know. It doesn't really make, that wouldn't really make up for that to me. That's not the way I look at it. Some people might, but
as things stand though, at this particular moment, you yourself, because of having ingested these drugs, consumed them for, I think, what was it, 14, 15 years, however long it was, that you're not clear whether you are able to reproduce or to have an active love or sex life. So, yeah, you're not clear on that then, I guess. You have not experimented?
No, I'm not clear on that. Although having an active sex life is not in the question. That, I mean, I probably know the answer to that one for sure, that it's I can't have an active, healthy sex life.
Ultimately, you'd like to have a relationship with a woman, though, that perhaps would carry itself out over the long term, if I'm not mistaken. Become, you know, married, as most people do, and living together happily ever after, ideally. If the situation were to arise, I guess, with everything in the environment, copacetic, basically, you are open to that, having a relationship with a woman.
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely open to it. It's just not very appealing to women. And if somebody is interested in me, I don't know, because they might find it an easy for manipulative reasons, because I'm kind of trapped in a situation. Settling for that might not be the healthiest thing for me or a child or anyone either, if that possibility did occur. It's also pretty traumatizing to be around other human beings. I really just can't get over my genitals being numb. I want to wake up. But yeah, hopefully that can happen too. But I'm not sure.
Yeah, exactly. Just play things by ear and see what transpires here over the long run. I'm trying to just back things up a little bit here, kind of getting caught up with the flood of comments that we've had coming in via YouTube. Godblood Gotti is a new character we have not seen too much of. In fact, this is the first time that I've seem to recognize that handle, stating that the construct of sterilization has not changed much from the Nazi-oriented basis of psychiatry, a branch of which utilized sterilization. As long as we know the pertinent history, it's easier to avert. Definitely will not be neutering my cat. I don't like my gonads butchered any more than the vet doing the neutering. I will arm all legal, lawful knowledge available to protect my family. Everyday Psych Victims Project concurring with the view that indeed, yes, it was the Nazis. Although, once again, people, let's not forget, it goes back to, I believe, 1920s USA is how it all came about via the push for eugenics. I think might have come from the British end of things, actually, and then was imported to the USA and then picked up once again in a big way by...
Let's not forget the founders, the funders of the experiments at Cold Spring Harbors and the plans that they made and publicized to sterilize however many 50 million or something of the American public and all over the world with their eugenics plans were funded by none other than the people that funded the setting up of mental health and mental health community centers everywhere in the UK and the world through John Rawlings Rees, the Rockefeller Foundation. They funded that publicly. That's on public record, as well as them publicly funding to set up mental health.
Cold Springs Harbor, did you say? As well as, let's not forget.
Off Long Island, New York, biological experiments and sterilization experiments. They published articles in the Washington Herald saying 500 million or 50 million or something Americans are defective, say scientists who have been working on this project for a long time that have received backing. This project funded by the Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegies and Harrimans and... these people have been, this is on public record. That was in the Washington Herald, one of those, amongst other places, which is now the Washington Post. They put that on public record around, I think it was the 1920s. Obviously, it went a bit more underground at certain points. The very same foundations funding both mental health and the publications to out openly say people are defective and they need sterilizing. The people involved in that also were scientists like Graham Alexander Bell, who invented telephone, and I'm sure, and many others which were not named in that article, but said there were other scientists involved. And remember, there's been a lot of research on around that time period of what hormones they want to affect to give people things like birth control and women when they can get pregnant and not pregnant. So this is a area which could have endless reach that we don't know about. But that should be enough to know something about this.
Cold Springs Harbor. Cold Springs Harbor Laboratory. Private non-profit. God bless those non-profits. The non-profit institution. Well, it must be a good thing, non-profit. What could possibly go wrong? With research programs focusing on cancer. How to make cancer? Oh, no, how to cure cancer. Oh, sure. We really want to cure cancer. Sure, indeed. Neuroscience, plant genetics, geonomics and quantitative biology. Joe Emanon basically stating that his father worked there. So, hey, small world. And, you know, that's one of the interesting things. Just in reading that, first thing that came to mind was, well, Joe being a pretty bright individual himself, a lot of people, and let's not forget, he's with a background in the defense industry and so forth, that everyone needs a security clearance to work in those areas. And they go all through your personal history, including probably especially family timeline and backstory and the like. So, you know, there might be a connection there. That's perhaps why he was chosen, or some would put it, tapped for the position and was able to find himself gainfully employed within the defense industry for as many years as he was. So, yeah, keep it in the family. Clear across the board. Just once again, let's not forget the Tavistock Institute. Very dodgy. Speaking of Hitler, a lot of people don't know this, but apparently he, during his missing years, that was one of the places that he visited. In fact, spent a couple of years. This is according to his sister, whose name escapes me at the moment, but apparently she, I believe, was a Brit, and he spent a couple of years working alongside, if I'm not mistaken, Churchill, out of the Tavistock Institute. Isn't it interesting, too, Churchill talking about history will look upon me favorably, I believe is what he famously said. The reason being, of course, is because I will write it, is how he put things. So, yeah, history will look upon me favorably because I will write it.
Before he was the so-called ringleader fighting the Nazis, he was pushing in Parliament, in the British Parliament, for sterilization inaction and laws to be passed through Parliament here. And it's the other politicians and public that stopped him.
Winston Churchill was a major supporter and backer of eugenics then, was he? Mental health, sterilization, mental hygiene. Got to keep it clean, folks. Get all that dirt, all those stains and that dirt. Tisk, tisk. So unsightly. We need to completely eradicate and rid the world of these.
Remember to get help stains for your poor mental hygiene. We're doing you a favor.
Well, and that's just the thing with the problem with the nanny state is the assumption that people are incapable or unable themselves to take charge of their lives, really, and put their own house in order. Once again, total conflict of interest. Where would the state be if people were, as individuals, clear across the board, fully empowered and able to live their lives in a way where they were independent and autonomous? That yeah. There was no need for anybody to take care of them.
The eugenics society that was here as well, their key members that you can find after the National Socialist Workers' Party in Germany, otherwise called the Nazi Party, with Hitler, used the national health system in Germany to do all this kind of stuff over there. William Beveridge was a key member of the Eugenics Society. He set up the welfare state. He wrote the report for the welfare state here, which obviously was in 1947, the act, I think, which was 1946 or 47, which was 1 year after the war ended with Germany that had that system. That's where the mental health was incorporated into the National Health Act in this country before obviously it was exported to other places. And so the National Health Act also included the mental health community centers that they wanted from Project Phoenix out of the Invisible College through John Rawlings Rees to roll out mental health community centers all across the country in siding with the National Health Service and the National Health Service Act of 1947, 1 year after we defeated the Nazis. And the Eugenics Society key members also includes John Harvey Kellogg's. That's our cereal. That's our processed food and our cereals. I'm not sure if people had cereals before they came up with that idea, but I imagine it stretches to processed foods in general. The idea that we're getting our nutrition from that, you know, they put things in it and vitamins, they say as well, you need to have your most important meal of the day is dried up processed food. And the welfare state, William Beveridge. By the way, a lot of people on the welfare state, the proof is they need to be on drugs to get benefits and as well as having a father out of the home. If they show that they're taking drugs for their mental hygiene, then they can get benefits. That's the main criteria in this country, as well as having the father out of the home and getting child tax credits, which makes a father more irrelevant and unnecessary. Kellogg's, John Harvey Kellogg's, and Brave New World, Aldous and Julius Huxley, that family were key members of the Eugenics Society. Also the Planned Parenthood people like Margaret Sanger and a bunch of psychologists and psychiatrists.
Charles Darwin, major figure, of course, too, and name figure quite prominently. Beveridge, is that how the word beverage came into the English language from?
It sounds relevant in that you down your beverage, drink your beverage. I'm not sure if that's where it came from.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground here, obviously, and we've run the course now. But one of the issues that we have not addressed or hit upon, too, one is how with this anti-psychiatry and psychiatrics and drugging position, how many people confuse you or suspect that you might be a Scientologist? That's got to happen from time to time.
Oh, yeah, I'm totally against cults. Mental health is a cult. So I'm not looking to join any other cults. I really don't want to be part of any cults. Mental health won't let you leave. Scientology won't let you leave. believe someone already posted a message on Everyday Psych Victims Project saying, if you're a Scientologist, please unfollow us. We don't want to be... The mental health predator system pick on people as predators, and Scientology, I believe, is just trying to do the same thing. I wouldn't say it makes our message void, but yeah, we have to part with people say, accusing us of being Scientologists and all this rubbish. But no, I'm not a Scientologist and I have no interest in joining a cult. After mental health being a cult, there's no way I'm being tricked into that one.
Just a couple last rapid fire points, hopefully you can address as we wind things down here. Is it the same in the UK where you are with only two signatures? You can have somebody institutionalized, say your father signs and your doctor signs, and you're basically, that's it. You've got no say in the matter. It's like, see you later.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it works. Yeah, two signatures. I thought it was two doctors, but yeah, it could very well be a family member and a doctor. They'll make it as convenient as possible. But yeah, that's how easy and quick it is and happens. And the doctor profits. That's how he makes a living. And your family member can also get benefits and carer's benefits as well. So they could also financially profit. And obviously there's other reasons why people might want to do that, to control you socially, their children socially, which often ends up happening with children that are dragged into this system. Their parents say the child is the problem, and then they're dragged into that system.
Okay. The Everyday Psych Victims Project, just in reference to this business of Scientology, stating that they want you to only focus on psychiatrists. Well, they do mental health, in quotes, themselves. So that's a pretty accurate way of looking at things, I would say. Finally, the Diagnostical Statistics Manual. What is it up to now? DSM, is it called DSMV or DSM 5, 4, something?
I'm not sure. All I know is it's a bad scam.
It seems like the book, every time they publish a new edition, just continues to keep getting bigger and bigger. It's like they magically go around, these doctors, supposedly called doctors, psychiatrists, managing to uncover new diseases and disorders, a real growth industry, to the point now even where they're including things such as the absurdity of oppositional authority, opposition defiance disorder. So you question anyone in authority, and suddenly it's like, oh, ho, ho, hey, yeah, that's mentally unwell. That's insanity. That's unclean. You need to be sanitized and cleansed of your sins, my son. So here, take these pills or come with us and spend a little time in this asylum, a sanatorium, or what have you, and we'll work a
little. How can you defend yourself against
educational
that?
Educational mind reform. Well, I don't know. How can you? Physically try to stand up for yourself, you'll be tasered, or who knows what'll happen. That's one of the things, too, is that in the UK, they've had their Second Amendment rights completely nullified, where it's illegal even to own firearms in most cases, frankly, is what it seems. So how can you resist this state tyranny when you're not even armed? One of the things which, thank God, still Americans, many of them, stand in support of, almost to the extent of it being a quasi-religious way of looking at things, I guess, really, a sacred right enshrined and something that they're not willing to give up in any way. So, yeah, anything more you would like to say then?
Yeah, on the DSM, I do know that on the book it says, very important, it says the World Health Organization on the book. So the world, that's attached to the UN, which is attached to the World Federation for Mental Health and the World Health Organization and the UN. It's got the World Health Organization on the DSM book, that I do know. And yeah, they obviously plan on spreading that around the globe.
Isn't that something? So we've actually got somebody on the line here who's just calling in, and I guess from the sounds of things is hoping to contact or converse with you. Captain Sinclair, are you there?
I be here, Jaffe. Yeah, I've been listening to most of the show here, episode 93 with Dale Brown. Really quite something there, Joe. Thank you for getting up and being a part of things, even 4 a.m. in the morning, 5, no, maybe pushing 6 in the UK. So your story, though, really quite amazing. Horrific, frankly, the way that you've been treated with the drugging and so forth. Hopefully you manage to make amends. and receive the retribution you so rightly receive. Thank you for being a part of things, though, and joining us here aboard the Robin Hood. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Captain Silver. Thank you, I appreciate it.
Captain Sinclair is the handle that he goes
Sorry, by. Captain Sinclair,
Not
sorry.
Captain Sinclair. That's fine, man. That's fine, so. And the press ganging story, wonderfully done. That's very kind of critical, key, central to the show here, the pirate dame. Bringing the trivia and facts, the history and law to listeners' attention, the press gang.
Yeah, the East India Company and the opium trade, the drug trade. Did the money just disappear? Did the East India Company... And the money that is invested in the opium takeover of China, did the money just disappear, or did the drug industry continue in another form?
Well, there you go. The war on some drugs. Things have merely transformed. Robbing Peter to pay Paul, I suppose. It's a good part of things. The paperwork things just being shuffled around and disappearing for a time, going underground. But really... The pirate, there's a reason we call the ship the Robin Hood, so we'll leave it at that, though. Thank you once again. Much appreciated. And hope to see you again. Happy sailing.
Thank you, Captain Sinclair. All right, there he goes. Yeah, he drops by from time to time. Sounds like he was in the Scurvy Dog, maybe, or the Howling Wolf. And that's where we ourselves are hoping to head off to here in just a... couple of minutes. Wrapping things up then, Daryl, any last bits of information that you can share with listeners? You do have a few links, of course. You are an active member of the Everyday Psych Victims Project, which people can quite easily find via Facebook. Do they have an account or channel over on minds.com?
We do, because we realize we may be back from Facebook very soon regarding their community guidelines. Probably very soon. So we are trying to branch out. We're just a few people. We don't get paid. We don't get any drug company funding. So we're just trying to do what we can to spread the message. So we do. But our main one at the moment is Facebook and the YouTube channel. And we're trying to open up to platforms like BitChute and for videos and other networks that are going to be more and more necessary. Also, there's an adverse effect charity trying to raise money for, and hopefully at least that will raise awareness at the very least, for the cure for permanent sexual dysfunction, hormonal attack caused by these drugs. They've raised 36,000 out of target, $100,000 so far. And I've supported that with a marathon. I'm injured for this one, so I'll do it next year. So I made a website called runagainstcastration.com to support that initiative, as well as Sterilizing the Mentally Ill, which is the original, or pssdblog.blogspot.com is the original way I came out with this.
And minds.com, Stop Sterilizing the Accused Mentally Ill. We've included your channel tagging you in most of the shares that we published on Minds. There's a couple of groups where we shared the link to today's show, as well as Facebook, of course, too. And I think you have a Twitter account. Don't know if you want to talk about that or not.
Yeah, they can find that through the runagainstcastration.com website. They can find the Twitter button there. That's probably the best way to find that.
Okay, and the pssdblog.blogspot.com. All this information and links, of course, will be included and made a part of the show notes. That about does it, Daryl. I'm not sure if you just provided all your links and everything. Just closing comments as we... transition on into the after show portion of things. Don't know if you'll be able to stick around for that or not. It usually runs for about an hour. It's got to be about 6 a.m. there in England at the moment. So just final closing thoughts or comments?
No, thank you very much for the platform. It's much needed. Share the information, save your family members and friends. And yeah, I can definitely join you next. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, we'll open things up here a little more on the Rogues Gallery after show. Thank you, Daryl, for being a part of things. Join us here with episode 93 of Pirate Radio Podcasts. Thanks to everyone who tuned in and helped to contribute in the comments section of the YouTube stream. Emily Anderson managed to find her way online just in the closing moments here. So that's great. Godblood Gotti, Johnny Canuck, Everyday Psych Victims Project, Two Pirate Joes. Hopefully not forgetting anybody. We are going to make our way on out of here and perhaps off to the Howling Wolf or the Scurvy Dog. Maybe even a little of that Mossy Wench might help out Daryl a bit with his current condition. We'll see if we can round up a few of those Mossy Wenches and engage in a little conversation with Daryl if things work out. In the meantime, folks, that about does it for this week's show. Hope to see you next week, of course, when we present to you episode 94 of the podcast. Until we meet again out on the high digital seas, on behalf of Captain Long John Sinclair and the rest of the crew on the Robin Hood, I'm your host as always, the show's Chief Communications Officer, Jaffe Ryder.
I know. There we be. Having carefully looked over each of our navigation panel instruments, checking every level, switch, dial, cable, knob, and pulley, by all accounts and indications, we indeed see it's time once again to drop anchor inside Mystic Bay and draw an end to another week of Pirate Radio Podcasts. Remember, if you're looking for a little more lively online action, keep in mind, we've likely got yet another great free-flowing Rogues Gallery after show coming up for the next hour in either Skype, Google Hangouts, or Peer.in. Also, if you've in any way enjoyed or found yourself benefiting from the shows we've tirelessly produced over the past 2 years, you might want to drop by our Patreon tip jar page and lend a little support. Half of all network donations go directly to charity. Help to keep those numbers growing over on Patreon, and we'll be able to extend even more of a generous pirate hand. Looking forward now to the balance of 2018, we're still not quite yet booked. So if you yourself have a new, novel, intriguing, or otherwise underreported idea, unique individual, or pressing item in mind, be sure to either drop us a line directly over on WPRPN.com or fire us a quick email via PirateOneRadio@gmail.com. We're always open to exploring fresh creative suggestions, intriguing guest ideas, cutting-edge discussion topics, and captivating themes. You can further embark on your own personal pirate journey by either liking, commenting on, subscribing to, or just following us via virtually any mainstream social media platform, including Twitter, Facebook, Google+, or Minds.com. So don't forget to become engaged. Until we meet again out on the high digital seas, I'm your host as always, the ship's Chief Communications Officer, Jaffe Ryder. Tally-ho!